This is Mae Brussel. This is the second half of World Watchers. In case you picked it up in the middle of the program, it is a one-hour analysis of news. It's program number 795. Before I go to John Tower, I just want to mention that the controversies aren't over in the White House. The recent one is the chief of staff is blaming the first lady for the appointee. Before he left, Donald Reagan blamed her for hurrying in the appointment of John O'Koehler, who belonged to the Nazi youth group. The Washington Post has an article about the hasty appointment of the new White House communications director has stirred fresh controversy within the strife-ridden Reagan administration and the wide rift between First Lady Nancy Reagan and White House Chief of Staff Donald Reagan. It seems that she wanted John Kohler, who belonged to the Nazi youth group in Germany, to become the communications director. Sources quoted Don Reagan when he was in there as acknowledging that he had interviewed Kohler, but the chief of staff added that Kohler's experience in the youth group was not on his resume when he read that. He gave it to persons in the communications department, but when they presented it to the Reagans, it wasn't there. The controversy within the White House is not over this aspect of Kohler's past, but what other experts say are described as the rushed manner in which the appointment was handled. They said the appointment was pushed by Nancy Reagan and U.S. Information Agency Charles Z. Wick. The appointment was announced Thursday. It was done quickly without running the usual traps, said a senior White House officials. Other sources said they did not know Kohler was being hired, although Mr. Fitzwater said yesterday the chief of staff interviewed him and in terms of the recommendation, and it was personnel chief Robert Tuttle who approved of him. Now, it's Robert Tuttle's father, Holmes Tuttle, who was one of the original kitchen cabinet people behind Ronald Reagan, and Reagan's California history was filled with Nazis, right-wingers, and fascists, and Mr. Tuttle pushed this through. Another article about this particular person who has been hired as the director of communications in the White House, he said he escaped Nazi Germany in 1945. The war was over in 1945. The Wall Street Journal had a story this week. Mr. Reagan's supporters and critics alike say that the White House seems to be prone to stumbles in the wake of the Iran-Contra scandal. The new communications director, John Kohler, who replaced fiery Patrick Buchanan, got off to a bad start over the weekend. He has already angered White House officials because when he chose to explain his boyhood membership in a Nazi youth group in Germany, he held a press conference just as the president was delivering his weekly Saturday radio address, and the White House was furious. When Reagan speaks, they're all supposed to listen, and he chose to have his press conference at the same time the president was speaking. That gives you a little inkling of what's going to go on there. Now, the Wall Street Journal had an editorial February 27th called the Tower Report, and the gist of it is that the commission concluded that the National Security Council as an institution is not irreparably damaged, that the National Security Council chief should not be subject to congressional confirmation, and that the NSC is a necessary instrument of presidential policy. Now, General Scowcroft, was National Security Advisor. He had the position as chief of the NSC, so he's investigating an agency he had, and he doesn't want it whittled away. John Tower wanted to be the director of NSC when Mr. Poindexter was appointed, but he has those ambitions anyway. He's not going to whittle away his powers, and he doesn't want you to investigate him if he's appointed as the director. Wall Street Journal said the core of this country's difficulty in foreign policy is that many members of the Washington community adopt the radical position that Congress not only has powers in debate and to fund foreign policy, but it's entitled to engage in policy execution. That is a prescription for paralysis. The Tower Commission suggests placing the congressional oversight of covert activities in just a single committee with a very restricted staff. The Tower Commission says there is serious management breakdown and that the problem is the leftists who want to take over foreign policies and decisions. And it is a direct result of successive congressional legislative strategies originating mainly within the political left. The strategies had two goals: to restrict the executive's ability to act and to effectively absolve members of direct responsibility for any failures. Now, the report on Reagan's intentions to invade Libya included sending 90,000 American troops. Our budget is way, way in the hole because of weapons that we spend that they tell us we need. We give them the money. We can't confirm who's the chief, and we can't interfere with what they do. They want all policy for making wars and then having Congress declare it after it's already started, or going like Vietnam without a declared war. Now, John Tower's name came up at the time of the Kennedy assassination. In fact, the very day of the assassination, it was in the newspapers, and his secretary said that it was there because there were allegations that John Tower helped Lee and Marina Oswald come back to the United States. Now, I'm going to cite references to some of this material in the Warren Commission hearings. This one's from Volume 28, page 367. It was a confidential letter from a government official dated March 31, 1961, saying that Oswald wrote the State Department in February of 1961, and he said it was inconvenient to go to Moscow for his interview. He didn't want to leave the city of Minsk. I see no reason for any preliminary inquiry. You can send it in a questionnaire to me. This is March 1961. And they said it is believed that whatever risk is involved in sending his passport by mail under the above conditions, it would be more than offset the opportunity provided the United States to obtain information from Mr. Oswald concerning his activities in the Soviet Union. It is the best interest of the United States to have him home. We should do everything within our power to facilitate Oswald's return and entry into the United States. That was in March 1961. And right after that, in 61, John Tower gets a letter in Washington, D.C. from Lee Harvey Oswald in Minsk. Dear Mr. Tower, my name is Lee Harvey Oswald. This is from Volume 22, Exhibit 105A. I come from Fort Worth until October 1959. He said, I live in the Soviet Union. Now I'm ready to come home. I've applied for a Soviet visa to come home with my wife. I applied to the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, and I'm ready to come back to the United States. My passport number, he gives the number. And I beseech you, Senator Tower, to raise the question by letting me come home with my wife. That's what he wrote to Senator Tower, a letter that Tower had. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald got a letter July 24th, right after that, 1961, from John McVicker, described in Who's Who in the CIA as John Anthony McVicker, who worked for the CIA Department of State in the Soviet Union. He was in the Navy till 1949, stationed in Moscow, of course. And from the American Embassy in Moscow, he writes, Dear Mr. Oswald, we have your letter of July 15, 61, in regards to return to the United States and your application for a Soviet exit visa. You will recall that further action on your petition for non-quota status for your wife is pending the receipt for you of a copy of your marriage certificate. In other words, just send us a picture of that and three official copies, and we're waiting for that. John McVicker from the embassy in the Soviet Union. January the 5th, 1962, 6 months later, Dear Sirs, this is written by Lee Harvey Oswald to the embassy in the Soviet Union. It doesn't have any of the spelling or errors in Oswald's diary that was contributed by Gerald Ford and the Warren Commission and Henry Luce to the world at large. The way that it read, Oswald is a total illiterate. This letter he sends to the embassy is as neatly typed and clean as Mr. McVicker's. He could have been a secretary and nothing in the spelling is wrong. He said, this is to inform you that my expiration date in living in the Soviet Union is up January the 4th, 1962. I've already informed the embassy. Exit visas for myself and my wife have already been granted by the Soviet Union, and I want to make arrangements to come to the embassy in Moscow and make future plans. Please look into this and notify us. Yours truly, Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, January the 5th, 1962, he was received at the embassy, and his letter came. Then he was received at the embassy and on January the 13th, and they discussed the forms that he would fill out for his wife to come to the United States. Now, there were only two or three Russian wives in the United States. I have the figure and the names of the people. And the Warren Commission, of course, noted that he did get here very quickly. And Oswald wrote nice letters to the embassy, and they wrote back to him. They said, the question you raise of a loan to defray the part of your travel expense to the United States can be discussed when you come to the embassy. And, of course, they sent him the money to come home from the United States. Mr. Frederick Dutton from the State Department wrote to there's a letter from John Tower to Mr. Dutton, dated January 26. Encloses correspondence I received from Lee Oswald relating to apparent efforts on his behalf to return to the United States. Now, he was all ready to come home. He told the embassy, send me the money, and my wife is coming. They said, just send the marriage certificate. The Soviet said he could come. So then John Tower writes to Frederick Dutton of Congressional Relations, Assistant Secretary, Department of State. He says, Tower said, I don't know Mr. Oswald or any of the facts concerning his reason for visiting the Soviet Union or any action this government can take. Quite obviously, his inquiry should have been addressed to the executive branch, the president, the executive branch. For this reason, I'm furthering it to you. Then there's a memorandum sent back or received by John Tower's secretary, and her name is Linda. Her name is Linda Lovelady, and she comes from Texas. Now, there was a Lovelady that was in the door of the Texas School Book Depository that was very controversial, a dead ringer double for Lee Harvey Oswald, but Lovelady has a memorandum from the U.S. Senate, and her name's at the bottom. And she said, it's noted, I received a call from Mr. Stanfield in the State Department regarding Mr. Lee Harvey Oswald's returning from the USSR. On November 2, 1955, Mr. Oswald swore the following affidavits. I affirm my allegiance as the Soviet Socialist Republic. He requested that his American citizenship be revoked. He now wants to return with his Soviet wife, who is pregnant. His mother lives in Vernon, Texas. She can't pay for his return. The State Department will probably finance this on a loan basis, which, in fact, he never paid back. They had all of his finances. He didn't pay it back. Senators should not become involved in such a case. Therefore, the State Department will report to us the course that they want to follow regarding Lee Harvey Oswald. February the 9th, John Tower wrote to Frederick Dutton of the State Department, we enclose for your information copies of correspondence of recent information from the embassy at Moscow regarding Lee Harvey Oswald. The correspondence sent to you by Mr. Oswald is being returned. Should you wish to be kept informed of further developments regarding Oswald, an officer familiar with the case may be reached. Senator, this is to Senator Tower. You can call code number 182, extension 5340, and discuss Mr. Oswald on those lines. Signed by Patrick Dutton of the State Department. That was a time when Mr. Dutton was working in the State Department, as well as a Joseph Norbury from the Soviet Embassy, with a Robert Owen in charge of political affairs, the Office of Soviet Union Affairs in Washington, D.C. Now, in the lawsuit that the Christic Institute has of defendants in the Contragate, there is a Robert Owen. He's young. I checked that out. He's a citizen of the United States, lives in Virginia, president of IDEA Incorporated, liaison to the Contras for Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. He has a brother, I understand, who worked for General Singh Laub in Southeast Asia, and it, of course, it remains to be seen. And I want to check out whether or not they are the son of a Robert Owen who was working in the State Department to get Lee and Marina out of this country, and they were also in contact with Senator John Tower in Texas. On May 8, 1962, there was a letter from Joseph Norbury from the embassy to Robert Owen in Washington, D.C., and it's regarding Lee Harvey Oswald, and they said, we will have you note on May the 4th in the Oswald case, if the 243G waiver is not granted, and that was the catch-22 here, Marina had to have a piece of paper signed and confirmed, or she couldn't leave the Soviet Union. And Mr. Norberg from the embassy says, if the waiver is not granted soon on this one, I think we should send the Oswalds to Belgium anyway. Don't wait for the papers that she needs to get out. It's not that our hearts are bleeding for the Oswalds. His arrogance knows no bounds. His latest letter contained an imperious demand that the State Department stop trying to get travel funds from his relatives to the U.S. He apparently thinks the travel money questions is the reason we're deferred stalling him, but of course they gave him the money to come home. He said, how dare you ask my family for the money? I'm going to ask you for it. And they gave him the money for airplanes, trains, and boats, and he took a boat to New Jersey. The International Rescue Committee met them. Agents of that committee, headed by Leo Chern, met them in New Jersey, had interviewed them for 2 days, put them on a plane. They flew to Fort Worth. Now, they were in Fort Worth from June 1962 up until the assassination of John Kennedy, But on November 22, 1963, in Volume 22 of the Warren Commission hearings, there's a letter written by John Tower from the office of Senator John Tower regarding correspondence with Lee Harvey Oswald. One, it says Oswald wrote to the office of Senator Tower in January 62 per attach, the letter from Russia they sent back. The second point, Oswald's letter was sent to the State Department. State reply to Senator Tower shown in attached correspondence and the name and the phone call by the State Department. Three, the state advised that the senator should not become involved in the case, and at no time did the senator correspond himself with Lee Harvey Oswald. He gave it to another channel, and then it was expedited. But the day John Kennedy was murdered, you would think that Senator Tower wouldn't know who he is or sit in Washington and write this letter. I spoke to Jim Garrison, a judge in New Orleans, who's such an expert on this case, and he thought it was rather interesting that John Tower's secretary and he were sending off letters the very day that John Kennedy was murdered. Now, in Volume 22, Exhibit 1058, there's information about John Tower and Mrs. Lovelady, and it tells about on January 26th, Senator Tower's office received a handwritten letter from Lee Harvey Oswald. Miss Lovelady, whose job was and is to take care of matters of this nature, Miss Lovelady, to take care of letters from people such as Lee and Oswald wanting to come to this country, she routinely passed the letter on to Mr. Frederick Dutton, Assistant Secretary for Congressional Affairs. And then it goes on to say that the reason they were interviewing her now, this is an interview by W. David Slauson of the Warren Commission to J. Lee Rankin, after the assassination, the memo was written up June 8, 1964. But the article, the interview, goes on to say that Miss Lovelady and Mr. Towery told me of the deposition of the letter from Oswald. The first thing that concerned us was the document dated November 22, 1963, entitled Regarding the Correspondence of Lee H. Oswald. It is a statement prepared for the press November 22, 1963. The history of this is that as soon as Oswald's name was mentioned in connection with the assassination on radio and television, Ms. Lovelady, Senator Tower's secretary, remembered that the senator's office had something to do with his name in the past, and after immediate file search, a statement for the press, along with the lines shown in the document, was made. The second matter concerning the Warren Commission, and the Secretary of State is for the purpose of clearing John Tower's name from the wild charges that was made in foreign and domestic press to the effect that he facilitated Oswald's obtaining a repatriation loan from the Department of State or otherwise helped him to return to the United States. And the Warren Commission investigator W. David Slauson says these charges have no basis whatsoever in fact. But the question is, why would the World Press on November the 22nd have a statement that John Tower worked and helped facilitate the return to Texas? Where would they get that information at all if Senator Tower only had one letter and passed it on? But there was a lot of communications. There was a private phone to use and so forth about the office of the Senator John Tower and the State Department and Lee Harvey Oswald. More to do than if he just transferred a letter and said, I don't know who this is. Now, Marguerite Oswald went to the Red Cross to get information. Lee wrote to her and said, go to the Red Cross and get information about my coming home. He wanted money to come home, and he asked Moscow for it. Instead of their writing the check, she was referred to the International Rescue Committee. This was in 1962. Leo Chern was active in the International Rescue Committee, a very anti-communist organization. In 1987, Leo Chern has been appointed by Ronald Reagan to head the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. In 1973-74, when Reagan and Edwin Meese were cooking up the SLA as the CIA, Leo Chern, in those days, had a very important role, not yet fully disclosed, in the formation of that practicing for terrorism, and Patty Hearst was thrown in the trunk of a car when she was kidnapped, and the memos coming out of Oliver North and the White House now are using kidnapping as a technique for terrorists, throwing them in the back of the car, the way it was practiced out here in California with Patty Hearst. In 1965, Oswald was writing to Senator John Tower. He wanted to come home. He was bringing his Russian wife. And John Tower, in 1987, is the man appointed by Ronald Reagan to investigate, if you can call it those words, the National Security Council, who's ignoring the foreign banks, ignoring CIA director, former CIA director George Bush, and John Tower's wife, I mentioned before in this broadcast, not only got a large salary as a sub-cabinet level, I suppose, on arts or whatever from Ronald Reagan, but John Tower's brother-in-law, Samuel Cummings, provided the arms and missiles to arm Gaddafi versus via our State Department and the CIA. And by arming Gaddafi, we created a madman with weapons. And then Mr. Gates and he was acting in the FBI with the CIA and Defense Department, could reshape all of Africa's map and begin invading Libya on the excuse that Gaddafi is a terrorist. When we send him the arms, there's no link of him to a lot of events that took place, agent provocateur excuses such as the Berlin disco bombing, the TWH hijacking. November 22, 1963, John Tower is writing letters to the State Department the very day that John Kennedy was murdered. Secretary for John Tower in this whole time period with these letters going on was Linda Lee Lovelady. John Tower is from Texas, so is Oswald. And as I mentioned before, Billy Lovelady is the very controversial person who could be one of the Lee Harvey Oswald doubles, standing at the doorway just when Kennedy's car came back in front of the depository, and people thought Oswald was downstairs because this Lovelady was a dead ringer for John Kennedy. Now, Ruth Payne, whose husband worked for Bell Aerospace, got Lee Oswald the job in the book depository where Mr. Lovelady also worked. If you saw national television this past week, they had a one-hour movie on Project Paperclip, and they referred to Walter Dornberger, the Nazi criminal, who came out to the United States on Project Paperclip for making missiles and rockets and weapons. Dornberger brought Wernher von Braun with him, and he was director for many years of Bell Aerospace, where Ruth Payne's husband worked for Walter Dornberger. So we have a Lovelady, I haven't checked this out, Linda Lee Lovelady, the secretary for John Tower, a Billy Lovelady in the depository, Ruth Payne, the hostess who housed Marina Oswald, who drove her to New Orleans and back, had Lee stay there on the weekends, and her husband worked for Mr. Dornberger, Bell Aerospace. And these people in 1987, you see movies of Mr. Dornberger, but what they don't show is the relationship of Dornberger to Bell Aerospace or Ruth Payne, or locating Lee Harvey Oswald as a patsy in the Texas School Book Depository. Now, Sylvia Marr, who wrote an index, The Warren Commission and Accessories After the Fact, has to be a high-level agent of the United States government. And she did an index of the Warren Commission hearings I've mentioned before and left out many of the important people that came from Munich, Germany, and worked in Dallas, Texas, or in aerospace that were part of the assassination. When I looked up Sylvia Marr's index to see if she had Linda Lovelady, the secretary of John Tower, there, because this is a definitive index of people involved in the assassination, she excluded Linda Lovelady. She had the one at the Texas School Book Depository, but very nicely concealed some of the most important people that are effective in our government today, whose names were in the Warren Commission hearings going back to 1964. One of the men she left out, and I mentioned it many times, is Robert Morris. Robert Morris was the chief counsel for Senator Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy went over to Dachau prison and released Fritz Kramer, the prisoner who I believe is now in charge of the Pentagon and the National Security Council for the past, as many years as 1948, when he went directly to the Pentagon, the mentor of Henry Kissinger. Among the 28 people, she left out Robert Morris's name. In 1960, that was before Reagan was governor, when Young Americans for Freedom was formed by William Buckley, who worked with the CIA, members of the founders of YAF with Buckley were Robert Morris, who was left out of the index, Strom Thurmond, Senator John Tower, and Ronald Reagan. It was 6 years before Reagan was governor, but there was an affiliation of Ronald Reagan with John Tower going back to those early days when Young Americans for Freedom became a front for the intelligence community and for persons to infiltrate and take over because of General Walker and the teams with Robert Morris to be in Dallas at the time of the Kennedy assassination. Now, Robert Morris in 1987 is working with Reverend Moon. He's on the board of the International Security Council. He works, that's a group with the former head of NATO, heads of the CIA, and also on that board is Joseph Cherba, president of the International Security Council. We go from Dallas in 1963 up to 1987. Now, when Ronald Reagan had a transition team, when he was to become president, he had a team of advisors who are now behind these billions of secret dollars for other projects. The advisors formed what they call the National Security Transfer Team for Ronald Reagan. And it included David Absher, who's now in charge of the White House to screen out and diversify the charges against Ronald Reagan and water them down, one of the co-founders of the Center for Strategic and International Studies with Richard Allen. Richard Pipes is part of this transition team. When Reagan came in and they told him he had to start taking Libya as a piece of redesigning Africa. Eugene Rostow, Michael Ledeen of Contragate's story, and Joseph Cherba. Now, Ledeen is the one that set up the meetings with Mr. Gorbanifar and with Robert McFarlane, a protege of Kissinger, who worked directly under Kissinger. Ledeen and McFarlane come out of the Kissinger, Haig, Kramer ilk. And the National Security Transfer Team was set up in the late 80s. But Joseph Cherba, the chairman of the International Security Council with Robert Morris, is part of the transitional team of what countries we invade and who we kill, setting up Ronald Reagan for international matters. The private citizen, the average person in this country, has no inkling of how these people connect from 1963 right up to 1987 and make provisions, as they publicly claim now, for World War III or IV. Now, Walter Stessel was ambassador in the Soviet Union at the time. Lee and Marina were writing letters, a letter to John Tower, and then he passed it on, and the embassy got the messages, and their papers were waived, and they came home very quickly. Stessel was ambassador at that time, and when Ronald Reagan was elected president, Walter Stessel was deputy secretary of state under Alexander Haig, and part of the transition team. He moved right into office to take care, right out of Moscow, the Lee and Marina milieu, and the persons, Lee and Marina writing to John Tower, Reagan with Tower and YAF going back to 1960s, a long linkage of people, and then Stessel getting an appointment under Alexander Haig with his same transition team. He passed away last year. When Lee and Marina wanted to come back to the United States, the man who has his name on the signature to the embassy, in Moscow, the one who was connecting Oswald to the International Rescue Committee and so forth and giving Marina passage, even if her papers weren't signed, they could get on to Belgium and be home in the best interest of the United States. John Anthony McVicker was the man at the American Embassy in charge of Marina's papers in Moscow. And if you read the book Who's Who in the CIA, it has a description of the stations and locations of John Anthony McVicker. Now, the very persons that Sylvia Marr left out of her index of the Warren Commission hearings, and I've had this on the air before, are a who's who of connections such as Lev Dobryansky working with Robert Morris and Colonel Willoughby from the YAF. Dobryansky is part of the World Anti-Communist League, working today with John Singlaub. His daughter, Paula Dobryansky, has been in the National Security Council with Sven Kramer, the son of Sven Kramer, and he was the ambassador to the Bahamas set by Ronald Reagan, a well-known fascist links to Nazi Germany. These kinds of people's names linked directly to Robert Morris, who now works and always did, you know, with the likes of Moon when he came into this country and so forth, were very carefully kept out of indexes. And, of course, the secretary for John Tower, Linda Lee Lovelace, is she related to Billy Lovelady in the Texas School Book Depository building? Now, I wrote about all these people in 1983, the 20th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, in the Rebel magazine. I wrote about Young Americans for Freedom and Robert Morris, the advisory board of YAF, Strom Thurmond, Tower, Reagan, Lev Dobryansky, and Charles Willoughby, and Robert Morris. Willoughby was in charge of the entire security for Douglas MacArthur in the Philippines. He came out of Hitler's Kriegsakademie, and his name was Karl Wiedenbach. So this linkage of the far right wing isn't something new. The press secretary coming out of the Hitler's youth isn't new. And the appointment of John Tower to keep the NSC as it is, remove a few people and keep it as it is the framework by which you do coups and assassinations. And it all is legal because the president ordered it. My time is up, and next week we'll continue with a lot more of Contragate. It'll be going on for the next 50 years. But it's interesting. There's so much material. In the meantime, this is Mae Bressel. I'll be back with you next week. Thank you for the articles and books and material you're sending me, and I hope to get it on the air eventually, if not next week. Thanks a lot, and I'll be back with you to continue along with this material.